It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world
Way news. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Iran's president declines to negotiate a nuclear agreement with U.S. lawmakers. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani Wednesday said his government is negotiating with six world powers, not U.S. lawmakers. Speaking in Rasht, Mr. Rouhani said our negotiating partner is not the U.S. Senate, nor is it the U.S. House of Representatives. It is the group of five plus one nations. His remarks follow Tuesday's unanimous vote in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee requiring congressional review of any final nuclear agreement with Tehran. President Obama has indicated he may support Congress's involvement. Mr. Rouhani also repeated his government's position. Iran will not sign a nuclear agreement unless all international sanctions are simultaneously lifted. President Obama Wednesday lauded the significant gains in fighting Ebola as he met at the White House with his Guinean, Liberian, and Sierra Leonean counterparts.
Last week, there were fewer than 40 new cases, so we've seen major progress. In Liberia right now, there are zero cases. In Sierra Leone and Guinea combined, there are fewer than 40 new cases last week, and that's around the lowest number in a year.
Mr. Obama says the international goal is zero cases of the deadly virus. The three West African leaders were in Washington for World Bank and International Monetary Fund meetings. The United Nations has called on Congolese authorities to exhume hundreds of bodies from a mass grave near the capital, Kinshasa. To determine how they died, the opposition alleges the grave may contain the bodies of those killed during anti-government protests in January. Congolese authorities deny this and are rejecting demands to re-examine the bodies. They say mass graves are common in Congo. This is VOA News. Europe is trying to cope with a flood of migrants from the Middle East and Africa after the Italian Coast Guard discovered hundreds of bodies from a capsized vessel in the Mediterranean Monday off Libya's coast. Amnesty International says some 10,000 have made the journey and been rescued so far this week. Spokesperson Gori Van Gulik called for a massive upgrade in international efforts to address the crisis.
We need a multi-country coordinated effort to stop this, and that means a humanitarian effort with a budget that is triple the size that it currently is, with a serious dedicated search and rescue power, and the scope to look closer to Libya and other places where these boats are in fact found so that they can be effectively rescued.
The UN High Commissioner for Refugees says the number of migrants making the dangerous journey to escape poverty, war, and repression this year could exceed the more than 200,000 who made that trip last year. At least 3,500 of those lost their lives in the attempt. The Saudi ambassador to Washington said Wednesday the Houthi rebels in Yemen have no choice but to give up their fight to take over the country by force. Ambassador Adel Al-Jubeir said the Saudi-led Arab coalition will make sure the Houthis fail.
The operation is today in its third week in terms of the Arab campaign. It has been very, very successful, and in fact it is proceeding beyond its initial goals. The air campaign has been able to degrade and destroy much of the military infrastructure that the Houthis and Ali Abdullah Saleh possess.
He said the Saudis are beginning to see cracks in the Houthi leadership and said some Houthis have defected to the Yemeni army. The Saudi diplomat denied UN allegations the Saudi-led airstrikes have been indiscriminate and killed a large number of civilians. The Saudis and their coalition partners are looking to restore the internationally recognized government of President Abdrabu Mansour Hadi. Political tensions remain high in Guinea following 2 days of clashes this week between anti-government protesters and police that the opposition says left three dead, dozens wounded. The government denies claims security forces shot at protesters who were throwing rocks. The opposition is angered over what it says is the government's reneging on an agreement to hold local elections ahead of national elections. Officials and historians gathered Wednesday to commemorate the 150th anniversary of the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, the nation's 16th president. Sally Jewell is the Secretary of the Interior.
His assassination was one of the tragic and pivotal events in American history.
Lincoln, shot by assassin John Wilkes Booth while attending a play the night before at Washington's Ford Theater, died in a home across the street April 15th, 1865. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 16th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. President Obama pledges U.S. aid for Ebola recovery efforts in West Africa.
We can't be complacent. This virus is unpredictable. We have to be vigilant, and the international community has to remain fully engaged in a partnership with these three countries until there are no cases of Ebola in these countries.
We'll have a conversation with Sierra Leone's President Ernest Bai Koroma. The U.S. ambassador to Burundi is urging President Pierre Nkurunziza to respect the terms of the Arusha Accord. There are doubts about a mass grave in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And an African Union official says the continent's economic growth lies in its human capital and infrastructure development.
Africa has remained at the level of dependence on extractive industries. And that's why this growth is not inclusive enough, because extractive industries tend to have huge returns. But when you look at it, it is simply operations that are very narrow.
Erastu Muecha is the deputy chair of the African Union Commission, and Nigerian senators call for an immediate investigation of the country's oil ministry. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. U.S. President Barack Obama is praising what he says has been great progress in the fight against Ebola in West Africa, but warns the international community must remain vigilant until the virus is completely wiped out. Mr. Obama Wednesday met with three West African leaders at the White House to talk about recovery efforts in the devastated region. VOA White House correspondent Luis Ramirez reports.
The progress that Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone have made with the help of the United States is evident. After killing 10,000 people in the region, the numbers are down to fewer than 40 new cases in Guinea and Sierra Leone last week. Liberia has no registered new cases. President Obama met with the leaders of the three countries and praised what he said was their great courage and resolve in treating victims.
Now we're focused on a shared goal, and that is getting to zero. We can't be complacent. This virus is unpredictable. We have to be vigilant, and the international community has to remain fully engaged in a partnership with these three countries until there are no cases of Ebola in these countries.
In addition to killing more than 10,000 people, Ebola damaged the economies of the three nations, and leaders are asking for help to rebuild. They also want to help build up their health systems to deal with future threats. President Obama on Wednesday said the U.S. wants to provide that help. The leaders, during their visit to Washington, had meetings scheduled with officials at multilateral organizations, including the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. The U.S. last year deployed thousands of troops to West Africa to set up medical facilities in the region, train medical personnel, and coordinate an international response to the epidemic. This week, Secretary of State John Kerry and an African Union representative signed an agreement for the creation of an African Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The U.S. is to provide technical advisors and funding for the institute, which is expected to launch later this year. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, at the White House.
Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma says Ebola has had a devastating impact on his country's development, but he said his government is now in the process of reactivating services. Mr. Koroma is in Washington with the leaders of Guinea and Liberia, three West African countries hard hit by Ebola. President Koroma says one lesson learned from the outbreak is the need to have a disease control centers in West Africa so that the region can effectively fight back in the event of any future outbreak. He says such centers will also help in the training of healthcare practitioners.
Ebola has been very devastating to all of us in the sub-region, those of us that were mostly affected by the virus. For my country, Sierra Leone, as a result of the Ebola, most businesses shut down. A good number of the mining companies ceased operations. Flights were canceled to the country. Tourism was almost brought to a standstill. And even within the country, businesses that were operating scaled down substantially. So there was a considerable slowdown in the economy, loss of revenue to government, loss of revenue to individuals, loss of revenue to institutions and businesses. The country was more or less isolated. Nobody ventured in. Nobody will discuss business at this time. The only visitors that continued to come in are those that are related to the fight against Ebola, health officials, international NGO officers, UN agency officers, mm-hmm. and the heads of institutions, like the head of and members of the African Development Bank, the World Bank, and others. So there was a considerable shutdown of all other economic activities. So it really impacted negatively on the economy.
What about the healthcare system? What lessons have you learned out of this situation so far so that you can improve the healthcare situation in your country and indeed really around the region and the continent for that matter?
As you may be aware, we are in the process of developing our healthcare system that was destroyed during the war. Mm-hmm. I must say that we did make some progress in terms of its development. We were not yet where we wanted to be, but we introduced a free healthcare in 2010 that greatly improved the access to health service. It's also improved on the maternal and mortality rates. But when Ebola struck, because of the unique nature of Ebola and because of, I mean, the fear people had not to expose themselves to equally sick people, a good number stopped seeking medical attention from the hospitals and clinics. And that is why medical services almost came to a standstill. We are trying to reactivate the services in the country. This will require us to improve on the health infrastructure.
That's Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma speaking in an exclusive interview with Shaka Sale of VOA Straight Talk Africa. Federal senators in Nigeria are calling on President-elect General Muhammadu Buhari to investigate the Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation and other parastatals as soon as he is sworn into office. Senator Ibrahim Musa of the All Progressive Congress Party tells reporter Peter Clotty that there are indications that the outgoing government was not a good steward of the country's oil ministry.
All Nigerian people are eager, are calling on the president-elect to commence a thorough investigation on the finances of NNPC because a lot of damage has been done to the account of NNPC. Not only APC senators, all the masses of this country are yearning for that investigation.
So, Senator, why the NNPC? Why single out only the NNPC where there are other sectors of the economy that could equally be looked into if that is what Nigerians are calling for?
Yes, yes. Not only NNPC. There are a lot of other parastatals that are to be investigated. I know. The damage is so much so that nobody can ignore the damage. Nobody. No incoming president can ignore the damage. Not even President General Buhari. Any other person that is elected apart from Jonathan will have to conduct those investigations.
Some people are saying that this investigation call is basically a witch hunt that the APC want to carry out. What do you say to that?
No, it's never a witch hunt. This is something that must be done because the damage done to the Nigerian economy is too much to ignore. Any government that is coming, not even the government of General Buhari alone, any government, I'm telling you, any government apart from the government of Jonathan, even if it were to be another PDP candidate, he must have to conduct that investigation.
Some people are saying that the minister there, outgoing minister, Madame Dezeni, seemed to have generated a lot of animosity among Nigerian political leaders, especially incoming APC, and that is why they are demanding an investigation because of all reports of corrupt activities allegedly that she might have undertaken while minister of that industry. Is that the case? Do you think those criticisms are justified?
No, the issue is not based on the design alone. This is the issue of, that has to do with the whole economy of this country. The whole issue of governance during the administration of Jonathan is a total mess. We are not with hunting design, no. Anybody saying that is misconceiving the issue. Not design alone, the whole of that administration is a mess.
So after the investigation, what do you suggest should happen next?
Anybody found guilty should be brought to book.
Ibrahim Musa is a senator from Nigeria's All Progressives Congress Party. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Batte in Washington. Today is Thursday, April 16th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 16 and a half minutes past the hour. The deputy chair of the African Union Commission says the continent is making slow but steady strides in meeting various targets outlined in the Millennium Development Goals set by the United Nations in 2000. Erastus Muecha says Africa's growth potential lies in its human capital and infrastructure development. He urged governments to invest heavily in technology and education. Muecha says a paradigm shift by African governments is key to unlocking the continent's growth potential.
Africa is still struggling to climb up the ladder in terms of transformation. Africa has remained at the level of dependence on extractive industries. And that's why this growth is not inclusive enough, because extractive industries tend to have huge returns. But when you look at it, it is simply operations that are very narrow in terms of encompassing society. But the more you move up, particularly in terms of having broader service sector, having manufacturing sector, you start to see level of employment and involvement, because it also comes with more skills, education and the rest, and the economy becomes more sophisticated. So this is the challenge that Africa has, and that is the trick. In fact, when you talked of 18 and 25, that is the ratio of investment. At the moment, Africa, what we see is only 18% of GDP that is being invested. But you need, for transformation to take place, at least 25% of GDP to be invested. And any model that you have seen, a country that has broken the barrier from being a low-value economy to a higher-value economy, is you must invest. Invest in education, invest in infrastructure, invest in technology, and that is where Africa now must focus for its transformation.
But what is the stumbling block? Why isn't it at that point?
Well, I think if you listen to our presentation, we are saying it is happening, but the scale is not enough. And mind you, we need to say one thing here, that Africa is not a country. We are talking of aggregation now. If you unpack, you see a few, mind you, that if you are talking of 10 fastest growing economies in the world, majority of those will be found in Africa. Now, there are a few of them. And when you look at some of these, you unpack, you find a few of these countries are those dependent on extractive industries. But you do have two, three of them, which are also now looking at issues of diversification of the economy. So unless we start to see diversification as part of the equation, this is where the trick is. Fortunately, this is now on the table. And in addressing them, particularly the investment gap, Africa said we must mobilize domestic resources.
Erastus Muecha is the deputy chair of the African Union Commission. He spoke in Washington with Undimiake Mwakelele of VOA's Zimbabwe service. The U.S. ambassador to Burundi says upholding the Arusha Accord, which stipulates a two-term limit for president, should form the basis for any electoral arrangement in Burundi. This comes as critics say President Pierre Nkurunziza is considering or being urged by supporters to run for a third term. Ambassador Don Liberet says the United States is concerned about the perception that Mr. Nkurunziza might run for a third term and the potential for violence if that announcement is made.
As you know, we have been on record stating that we are concerned if there is any violence that would be related to the elections. So one of the key messages that we have is to encourage all stakeholders to engage in dialogue, to engage in a peaceful process of transition, and to refrain from any type of inciting of violence, which includes any incitement of hate speech or anything like that. So our emphasis and what we hope is that the Burundian stakeholders, the political entities, as well as the population, will continue to engage in non-violent, participatory, democratic process.
I know for a fact that before he retired, the U.S. Special Envoy in the region, Senator Russ Feingold, said the United States is opposed to President Pierre Nkurunziza's running for re-election. Though he hasn't announced his running, top officials within his party have been pushing him to run again. As someone right there on the ground, what are your thoughts?
The United States has been very clear that what the envoy stated and what I will repeat. The United States government supports upholding the Arusha Accord, both in terms of principle, the letter, and the spirit of the Arusha Accord. And the Arusha Accord has been quite clear about a two-term mandate. And so that is the position of the U.S. government, and that is what we have indicated all along is our policy.
And what do you think would be the implication if President Pierre Nkurunziza decides to run? Some regional leaders have warned of violence if the president decides to run. Do you echo those sentiments too?
There are a number of individuals and governments who have indicated a concern about the potential for violence if President Nkurunziza was to announce that he would be running for a third term. And so we are concerned about the perception and we are concerned about the potential for violence if that announcement were made.
Dawn Libere is the U.S. ambassador to Burundi. She was speaking with Edward Rema of VOA's Kenya Rwanda service. Authorities in the Democratic Republic of Congo have given foreign observers a tour of the biggest morgue in Kinshasa to try to dispel any doubts about the official explanation for a mass grave found near the city. Nick Long has more for VOA from Goma in the eastern DRC.
Many Congolese still seem to be mystified by what they hear about the mass grave that was dug at night near Kinshasa this month. Authorities say the 421 bodies buried there on March the 19th were those of 300 stillborn babies and fetuses, 57 abandoned and destitute people, and 64 unidentified people. The government says an investigation is underway, but has rejected calls for the bodies to be exhumed or for international experts to help with the investigation. Opposition politicians say the grave was used to dispose of corpses of people killed during 3 days of anti-government protests in Kinshasa in January. The government denies this.
Maintenant, nous disons tout simplement l'opposition. Nous savons qu'on a tué, on a tiré sur nos militants à bout portant.
José Makila of the opposition MLC party says he knows that security forces shot at MLC supporters at point-blank range, and he has no hesitation in saying that some of those supporters were buried in the mass grave. But so far, the opposition has not presented the public with a list of names of people they think were buried there. The International Human Rights Federation, or FIDH, based in France, says it believes at least 42 people died in the protests in January. Their bodies have been accounted for. Florent Gale is a researcher for FIDH.
Pour le moment, nous avons annoncé 42 morts.
He tells VOA there could be several dozen other people who disappeared during those protests, but for the moment, his organization has no exact figure for fatalities or missing people apart from the 42 that they know are dead. Many people have been asking why authorities needed to bury so many bodies in a mass grave, given the nuisance to local residents who were not informed in advance. In response, authorities gave foreign and local journalists a guided tour of the biggest morgue in Kinshasa, pointing out what they said were 178 unidentified bodies. A spokesman for the ruling coalition, Alain André Atundo Liongo, recommended this visit to a talk show presenter this week.
Mais est-ce qu'aujourd'hui on se pose la question de connaître le nombre de chéguiers?
Go to the morgue and smell the nauseating odor there because of the overcrowding, he says, adding that when the authorities in desperation decided to empty part of the morgue, people with ill intent turned this into a big problem. Some have questioned how so many people came to be abandoned or unidentified.
Passer à la mort et sentir l'odeur nauséabonde, justement à cause de la surpopulation. Et lorsque, en désespoir de cause,
have they thought how many street boys there are in Kinshasa? Atundu asks in response. And what happens when a street boy dies? A journalist with an opposition newspaper, Lafar, who went to the morgue, said the visitors were so overwhelmed by the choking disinfectant in the air that they did not stay to conduct an inspection. A civil society researcher in North Kivu, Gento Mandu, told VOA that it is hard to believe large numbers of protesters were buried in the mass grave, as there were not many reports of people who disappeared after the demonstrations. But FIDH's jail says his organisation regularly hears of missing people in Congo and is investigating disappearances in the months before and after the protests. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we'll begin with football. Nigeria beat Egypt 4-1 and Ivory Coast pipped hosts Seychelles 2-1 in Group A at the Africa Beach Soccer Championships in Roche, Kaima on Wednesday. Madagascar pipped defending champions Senegal as Morocco outplayed Ghana 5-3 in Group B. Today, Thursday, Seychelles play Egypt, Nigeria engage Ivory Coast, Senegal tackle Ghana, and Morocco face Madagascar. Turning to athletics, South Africa's former Africa 100-meter champion Simon Magakwe has been suspended from athletics for 2 years. For an anti-doping rule violation, Athletics South Africa, ASA, revealed in Johannesburg, South Africa on Wednesday. According to the Federation, Magakwe failed to appear for an out-of-competition dope test on the 22nd December 2014. ASA says Magakwe has not appealed against the sanctions. Last year, Magakwe won his sixth consecutive national 100-meter title in a national record of 9.98 seconds. On a more cheerful note, Ethiopia's world indoor 1500-meter champion Genzebe Dibaba was crowned the 2014 Sportswoman of the Year at the Laura's World Sports Awards in Shanghai, China on Wednesday. She stood out for setting the world indoor records in 1500 meters and 3000 meters, as well as a world best in 2 miles. Dibaba ran the fastest 5000 meters and 2000 meters outdoor last year. She also clinched a gold medal in the 3000 meters at the IWF Continental Cup in Marrakech, Morocco. In golf, the African Zone 6 Golf Championship tees off in Kampala, Uganda today, Thursday. Defending champions South Africa face a stiff challenge at this annual event from Botswana, Kenya, Malawi, Mozambique, Namibia, Swaziland, Zambia, Zimbabwe, and hosts Uganda. Finally, Ghanaian sportsmen and women can breathe a sign of relief after the Ghana National Sports Authority settled an outstanding debt of US$35,000 owed to the Supreme Council of Sports in Africa, media reports in Accra revealed on Wednesday. Until recently, it was not certain that Ghanaian athletes would be allowed into the Games Village at the All-Africa Games due in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo, in September. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Our listener mail for this Thursday morning, April 16th.
It is very, very sad, extremely sad, that a year after the Chibok girls were kidnapped, the Boko Haram have not shown a sign of their release, which is so barbaric and ungodly. Mr. Boko Haram, if you were parents and family members of those girls, how would you have felt? Remember God's judgment. Bring John here, Obudokato Ranch, Cross Water, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The United Nations urging authorities in the Democratic Republic of Congo to exhume more than 400 bodies from a mass grave near Kinshasa. That's it for this Thursday, April 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer David Vandy, and reporters Peter Claudine and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Butte in Washington saying have a lovely day, Africa.
Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio. Hello, I am Shaka Sali, the host of Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America. Each Wednesday night, I'll put you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they, you and I, talk about the most important social and political issues in Africa. Shaka Sali saying, I'll be waiting for your call Wednesday night on Straight Talk Africa from the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Please join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 1700 hours UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas and enlighten us all on the topic at hand. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 1700 hours UTC on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America.